the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, where everything we say is for entertainment purposes only, and absolutely not anything else. My name is Joey. Here, as always, with my co-host, Len. Len, I noticed that for the audio-only audience, you have a few new artifacts there behind you. You want to talk about that a little bit? How you doing?
Yeah, so I'm keeping a tab on how many days it's been since the last bank collapse, and right now we're standing at zero, so I'm going to be updating that every so often. And it's kind of, this one is hidden, but it's just a line through the banks that have all capitulated.
Silicon Valley Bank.
Silicon Valley, yeah. The one today of
First Republic.
Yeah, and there's another. So just all the banks.
PacWest walking a tightrope right now too.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? We should have a CBP death pool for banks. That's what we should be.
And celebrity death squares at this banks.
Yeah, and then all proceeds go to like Bitcoin Smiles or something like that. If anybody's interested in this, let's do it, man. We could set something up, and you don't even have to have sats involved. But you just put our names in, and there's no gains to be made, just more clout than anything else. PacWest seems like it's a leading contender.
That's a big one. Yeah, that's a big one. So we got a lot to talk about today, and we're going to get to banks for sure. We should talk about our sponsors first. Yeah. Before we talk about the collapse of civilization, talk about the sponsors. EasyDNS. We love EasyDNS. We're using EasyDNS. Well, Len has promised to take his headshot this weekend at the CBP meetup, which I'm sure we'll also talk about before we set up our website. And so we're going to be doing that all on EasyDNS, man. They got a lot of stuff. Uncancellable, you know that, okay? But they got a lot of other stuff. They host domains. They got DNS, obviously, it's in the name. Web hosting, VPS hosting. So if you got a Bitcoin node or you run a little store, I know a bunch of you guys run little stores, BTC Pay Server, Nostr Relays, you can do it all over there. Plus email, get away from Gmail, which is dope. They have a tool you can use to move all your email over, so it's not that hard. I know, like, we would probably use that if we were going to switch over, when we switch over, because God knows the show Gmail is a total mess. And they have GPG encrypted email forwarding, so they can't even read your emails over there at EasyDNS, which is sick. And the domain packages come bundled with emails, or you can get standalone packages too, which is awesome. And of course, we do some other stuff with EasyDNS. The Access of Easy podcast, which was on our feed, is now on that feed exclusively, or the YouTube channel. Go there, check it out. Sign up. Plus, there's something else I was going to mention. Oh, Mark writes the Bitcoin Capitalist letter that came out today. And I was reading through it a little bit on my break from Le Français pendant ma journée de travail. And it was pretty good. You know what I like about the crypto capitalist, used to be called that, the Bitcoin Capitalist letter? There's always quality JPEGs and screen caps in there. And Mark always has the receipts. He's always got the receipts, things he said in the past, shots he called, and quality stuff from Twitter and the memeverse. So yeah, man, all that stuff going on over at EasyDNS. Check it out. Make sure you use our code CBP Media or tell Mark we sent you or whatever. And you get, I think, a pretty nice discount, 50%, right?
50% off initial purchase. Yeah.
So I know a few of you guys have gone there with the code, without the code. And actually, it's funny, Sean Anstey after the show last week was like, yeah, I actually love EasyDNS. I meant to move some email over there the other day. So not only are we referring listeners, we are referring guests. That's the kind of power we got over here. Okay, Len, we got another sponsor. Who are they?
Yeah, Bitcoin Well. And I'm even wearing the shirt supporting them. And so if you do want to get some privacy, Bitcoin, that's a good place to do so. You can go to one of their ATMs. And if you purchase less than $1,000 worth of Bitcoin in Canadian dollars, of course, all you got to provide is a QR code. Nothing else. Just input your money, the QR code, and you're good to go. But
this is a perfect day, by the way. Can we just talk about the huge dip, CBP 33? Did you use it? I didn't go to the ATM. I didn't have time today. Maybe you did.
Well, I haven't either today, but we'll get to the codes momentarily, because they have a lot more other things that they offer online. You could purchase Bitcoin with a spread so cheap it's almost negative. They're taking your dirty fiat and giving you Bitcoin in return. Also, you could buy gift cards over there with your Bitcoin, and there's a lot of different stores and locations you could use it, but you could also pay your bills with Bitcoin, so you could live on a Bitcoin standard. And remember, when you do purchase Bitcoin from Bitcoin well, it is non-custodial. So you have to have a wallet set up beforehand. And ultimately, you're going to control where the Bitcoin goes. You control the keys for all your buys. And finally, they have the Bitcoin Well Infinite program. That's for all you big fish out there. So if you want to take advantage of that, you are able to do so. So as for codes, CBP33 at the ATMs gives you a 33% discount on Mondays, every Monday, including today. And CBP10 gives you 10% discount on every other day. Online, use the referral code CBP. Everybody who does so signs up with the referral code CBP online and transacts before May, actually, end of May. So you have 30 days. You're going to be entered into a draw to win a Block Clock Mini. So the timer is ticking. You have until the end of May. Use the CBP code when entering it online, and you're good to go. I also want to thank Adam from Bitcoin Well. I met him this past week and had lunch with him. Yeah. Very nice fellow. So, yeah, I want to thank him for that. It was really nice meeting him, and too bad the weather was really crappy in the GTA at that time. But c'est la vie.
I only have one comment here. Inside baseball, Adam will probably comment on this, or Dave will if he's in the chat. Bradley, did you pay for that lunch? The CBP board members voted not to pay for the lunch. And yet I noticed in the group chat we have, the lunch was comped. What are we doing here? We're not making money over here. It's a bear market, Len.
The last Sunday of April, we always open up the wallets.
Who's we?
Collective we, man. It's the collective we.
Oh, my God.
Anyways.
What's the point of voting shares if the vote gets on the web?
Let's move on.
We got to talk about this later. I don't know. I don't like this. Anyway.
And the burgers were good. So let's move on. We also do have a meetup taking place this Saturday, May 6th. We have a few spots open. If you are interested in joining us, it's in Oakville. Reach out to Joey or myself, and we'll be able to provide you the details. Yeah, so if you're looking to come in, this is going to be a good opportunity to meet Joey or myself and a bunch of other Bitcoiners that are like-minded. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity to meet us and talk Bitcoin. So I'm not sure if you want to add any color to that, Joey.
Should we give the address here? Like, are we close enough to the day of to give the address? No.
I'm going to give it direct just in case a bunch of people show up, because we have just such small numbers that we're able to do it. Like, so there we go. We have a guest coming on this Wednesday. Medi's coming on. He's the CEO of Lincoin. That's a Bitcoin mining company. So we'll talk about Bitcoin mining. It's been a long time. It's a pool. So it's going to be good to talk about that. And it's going to be great to see what's going on over there. We haven't talked about at all along these lines with any other company. So maybe a little bit with DMG, but this is going to be a little more in depth with Bitcoin mining.
The pool always interesting platform. Hearing what these miners who are operating during the bear market have to say. Are you doing that one, or am I doing that one? You want to do it? I did Sean last week. You do it.
I'm good with it. I think the next bunch is going to be more me, considering I'm the guy that booked most of them. So
you tell me if you need a break, but you just sub me in. Give me a week so I can at least learn about these people and their operations. I do it. That's all.
And before we even go any further, the Boostagrams, let's just talk about them. Really quick, just want to thank everybody that has boosted our show on Fountain. And Mo BTC Dick boosts us. Fuck the IMF. Going to dive into Gladstein's book soon. Very good. Rander writes in, I think it would be really good to try and get somebody from Bitfarms on the pod. I've been a shareholder almost since it went public. Great Canadian Bitcoin company. I'd love to hear you guys chop it up with Bitfarms. We've had somebody from Bitfarms in the past.
Ben was on, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll probably get him again. Is that's on the agenda? Are we trying that for that, Joey? We're trying to get
he
Ben
did.
Back
we him and I were him and I were talking. I have to.
I remember. I don't know what's.
Yeah, I have to remind him. I know he just announced from Miami too, right? Maybe I'll nudge him, or you guys can nudge him. Go on Twitter right now and tell him, hey, remember that DM that you have with Joey? Pick a date. I know summer's we're packed in the summer anyway, but we can get him on, man. Whenever you guys want, 100%. They're good to talk to. Those guys are. Remember they had a moment last year where they were a mining company that bought Bitcoin. I think they bought
40 something.
Yeah, they were the only ones to do that and to execute that strategy, I think, right? Ben had a pretty good explanation for it, basically that they just thought that at that price, that much cash they had, it was the right move instead of buying miners or deploying more hash. So interesting. Yeah, I'd like to get him on again. He's a super bright guy. So that would be
absolutely. Yeah. And Norman Remnant writes in, seek out the Remnant. So check that one out. Doug and Roop, please tell me this works in the UK. Currently getting my head around RoboSats, and I found I could buy Amazon gift cards with random shitcoins I have hanging around. Win, win, win. So I think he's talking more that you could buy in Bitcoin Well with you could buy gift cards with Bitcoin. I'm not sure if that works internationally. You may want to check that out. He also writes in, Rander writes in, this episode with Sean was an all-time best in Minus opinion. Tons of great info and ideas in this for everyone. So people love that episode.
How cool is it that he's running that company based around Lightning growth, Lightning adoption, channel? They're building a company that has channel liquidity and routing fees as part of a business. Like, it's incredible, man. If you think you're all in on Bitcoin, let me introduce you to Sean Anstey, okay? That's a guy who's all in, all right? He is all in on Bitcoin. And he's a good guest, a lot of passion on that guy. So I was glad to talk to him. Good to catch up to you. You know, we talk to the guests after the shows most of the time, and he's a pleasure to speak with. Very nice guy. Glad he came on again.
And thank you for doing that, Joey, because unfortunately I had personal things to attend. So sorry about that, Joey. You had to tag in really late. But Joey, before we rhyme off the topics we'll be talking about today, anything else you want to talk about before we talk about the price of Bitcoin?
I was going to give it to you in US dollars, $28,115. Not bad, not bad. I was providing average and below average TA to a few people in a group chat that I have. And I don't know. We're going to see how it turns out. I'm sure there's a lot of saved screenshots and stuff I've been saying. So what about Canadian dollars?
$38,062. So yeah. Anyways, lots to talk about. And I'll rhyme off a few things. Bhutan, Trust Wallet, LastPass, Neutron Pay, U.S. selling Bitcoin, First Republic Bank, and we have comments from the Bank of England, debt ceiling talk, tanks running on batteries, four-day work week, and a whole lot more, Joey.
Amazing, amazing.
You know, it's funny because with all these banks collapsing, and just today we had another one capitulate, in my personal opinion, Bhutan, the news about that is the most important thing. And funny enough, when you have a top 20 bank fail and it doesn't make top list on a show, that goes to show you how important this topic is. Bhutan, we talked about them last week. And at that time, we were talking about Drock Holding Investments. That's their financial firm over there that invests for their citizens. They were secretly stashing Bitcoin. And it was realized through combing through court documents, through the BlockFi and Celsius liquidation going on. It's going over there. And, well, they had a loan with those companies, and they ultimately paid them back. So we talked about maybe this was the first sovereign wealth fund that directly owned Bitcoin. You know what? The country has taken it a step further, Joey. So the Drock Holding and Investments CEO, Ujjal Deep Dahal, love that name. Well, he says that they are mining for Bitcoin, but also claims that they have a diverse portfolio. So maybe they're mining shitcoins as well. They do mention that they've mined some ETH, and obviously this is no longer the case since ETH is no longer a proof of work. It's switched to proof of stake around September last year. But notably, the largest digital asset they have on their balance sheet is Bitcoin. And they said, Joey, they started mining when the price of Bitcoin was $5,000.
Wow.
I went back in time. When was it $5,000? The last time, March 2020. Right? Before that, April 2019, and many other times before that. So they've been mining at the very least since March 2020. Could be longer, I don't know. But it's very least they're mining for several years. And DHI, they said of the Bitcoin that they've mined, they have not been putting this anywhere risky to lose them. So they said they haven't been putting this on BlockFi and Celsius. So regards to this, they have diamond hands for this virgin Bitcoin, or almost diamond hands. And I'll explain why. They get it, they mine, but they also sell some of the Bitcoin to pay for the electricity costs, the electricity bills. This all makes sense. And for people out there wondering, what is their power generation in Bhutan? 99% is green energy. It's hydroelectric energy that is generating the majority, 99% of electricity in Bhutan. And at times, that country generates three times the electricity that is the demand within the country. So there's a lot of excess in for electricity. It's not always the case. Sometimes there's a deficit, in which case they import the energy from neighboring countries. But at the times where it's in excess, they're mining Bitcoin. When they don't have enough energy that they're able to meet the demand, they throttle back their Bitcoin mining operations to the point where they turn it off. So ultimately, it's a load balancing system, the way it's intended to work. Yeah. I like this. And with respect to Bhutan, We talked about countries along this elk. They have the most to gain, a little to lose. And they also, they have a political system in place. It's a constitutional monarchy that enables them to pass these types of rules, regulations, whatever you want to call it, policies, with very little resistance. Over here, you have an environmental assessment. You have to appease all these people. And over there, they want to get something done, boom, done. So this is a case where you have a country that is able to do it. And I think Bhutan looked at the experiment that's going on in El Salvador and realized things aren't that bad over there. It certainly didn't capitulate the country that it got torpedoed. El Salvador's debt to GDP is actually better than Bhutan, 83% versus 125% for Bhutan. So Bhutan's financially in a worse position. So they have a heck of a lot to gain here and very little to lose. In fact, I looked at the World Bank and how they viewed Bhutan. They said their risk to external debt distress is moderate. Their overall risk to debt distress is moderate. So the World Bank looks at them and says that this potential that they could default on the debt. And this also impacts their ability to take debt from the IMF. They're obviously going to take it at a much higher rate. And then this cycle just continues. So they probably were looking at what's going on in El Salvador and thinking, hey, we could probably take a gamble on this and maybe get off the shackles of the IMF. In fact, the World Bank was saying the stock of public and public guaranteed debt has increased significantly over the past decade, driven by investment in hydropower projects and more recently the COVID-19 pandemic. I love it. So these investments in the hydroelectric projects are being used to mine Bitcoin. They've used approximately 5% of their GDP to snap up these Bitcoin mining machines. And we were wondering the past few months, where has all this hash rate come from? Probably not all from Bhutan. But I have a feeling, Joey, there are nation states out there secretly, quietly plugging in ASICs because they see the potential here. They could do it with excess energy, with very little resistance. But unfortunately, over here in Canada, resistance is everywhere. In fact, we just got news. The last thing I'll say about this, New Brunswick Power, they put the kibosh for any new Bitcoin mining operations. Any sort of new applications coming in, it's shelved. They're not going to allow it to go ahead because they're worried about the power that is going to be consumed by these Bitcoin mining operations. It's too bad over here in Canada. We have three provinces, I think four now, that are doing this. Countries like Bhutan, they're accepting this. It's a sad reality. We're going to lose this race if we continue down this path.
So a couple things I want to give you an original take on this, but I don't have a better one than Marty has over at TFTC. They were talking about this on Rabbit Hole Recap, and he wrote about it in the Bent. This is today or yesterday, I forget when. But to the point that you and I have made over the few years we've been doing this show, that game theory plays a huge role in Bitcoin adoption, not just because of sort of geopolitical games, but currency means a lot to a lot of people. In countries that are that small, that rely on the U.S. dollar at some level, whether it's for energy trade or other import-export relationships. The idea that you could have a secondary sort of plan B, right, which I almost hate to call it at this point, but you could have like a plan B with Bitcoin that protects you from parasitic organizations like the World Bank, the IMF, the United Nations, stuff like that, right? That, you could say whatever you want about their aims, their intentions. Their track record is terrible. Okay. At the end of the day, this is beyond dispute. So in the interest of keeping this away from opinion, you can look at the track record of these organizations. How many people does the IMF help get off of IMF, lifelines? The answer is zero. It's like hiring a personal trainer who never actually tells you to exercise, right? It's genius if you're the trainer, but if you're the fat guy trying to drop 20, it might not be for you. So, in the interest of staying off the proverbial treadmill, these countries are doing their best to try and, find a way to become independent financially, economically. And there wasn't really a viable option for them until Bitcoin came. Marty's take, and I think it's in line with what we've been saying, is that Bitcoin hyper-Bitcoinization will happen on the margins. It'll happen on the fringes first and work inward. Now, you mentioned there something interesting. I don't know if we're going to talk about this tonight, but if we are, maybe we can move it to this part of the show. This idea that other nation states are mining, to me, is no longer conspiratorial. I don't even think it's really in question anymore for most people, especially people in Bitcoin who watch hash power, watch hash rate. it's difficult to get it up in the first world, right? It's difficult to get it up in places where there's no power. So where's it coming from? Well, the answer is places like Bhutan. And, you know, again, not to draw on Marty too much because it's not his show, it's our show. But, you know, he makes the point that the connections he's got in the ASIC world are saying that they're selling to the Russian government. So, like, if that's the case, man, you're going to see a big shift here pretty soon. And just, you know, as an aside, the people who say that this is not possible, that the dollar is not in jeopardy of failing, the dollar is the, you know, world reserve currency now and forever, amen. Explain to me how, you know, how most people, or I shouldn't say most people, but, you know, many countries are accumulating gold now. Central banks around the world accumulating gold. Trade for commodities settling in currencies that are not the US dollar. It seems to me that more people, whether they agree on Bitcoin or not, more people are on the same page now when it comes to the following. The US dollar is in decline. And what we know is that the US dollar is not going to be around for that much longer. What we don't know is what comes next. And there's other, you know, other potential sort of fill-ins and stuff. I know someone from the IMF was saying today that, you know, there's 10 or 12 countries working on CBDC project rollouts and things like this. We know the CBDCs are on the way. We know that governments will do their best to restrict freedoms and they'll use currency to do that. And Bitcoin is kind of a, you know, thorn in the side, to say the least, of those plans. But I think as well, the more land that we see these countries succeed, the more that we're going to see like real attacks on those countries from US dollar beneficiaries. You know, like if you had to take the over under, this is a bit dark for, you know, 15, 20 minutes into the show, but if you had to take the over under on how many more years Bukele is alive, if the El Salvador Bitcoin bet continues to work out, would you take over or under 4.5 years?
I'm going to take over because I haven't put too much thought into it. And I would assume that he's
four and a half years is about two halvings, right? Maybe halving and three quarters. You know, the US has killed higher value targets that are probably a lot more difficult to access than he is, and a lot less willing to go on stage at conferences, parade around talking about the success of his economic bet with Bitcoin. You know, that kind of stuff is difficult to say out loud because it really shows you sort of where we are broadly as a global community. But, you know, if I look at what's happened in the past, it seems to me like there's less likelihood that they'll just be okay with it and more likelihood that they'll continue to roll out their, you know, maybe EV fleet of tanks at that point over to El Salvador or wherever else and try and nip this thing in the bud. It's a strong story. I'm glad to see that Bhutan is mining. I'm glad to see they've gone public with the fact that they're mining. And the other thing that you didn't mention there that is worth mentioning is now you have really two model, if entry level, model states to look at. One for using Bitcoin as a balance sheet asset and currency, and one for how to mine at the state level. Even though small, they are potentially scalable. And these are important things for countries that are just a little bigger than them. Maybe countries like, I don't know, Mexico. Like, is that a good example? There might be others, right? I don't know. Mexico's maybe too close, obviously, like in NAFTA or whatever NAFTA's called now. But you get what I'm saying though, right? There's countries that are just a little, there's like, you know, they're a stone's throw in size and economic output from places like Bhutan and El Salvador. And maybe they're going to look at this and say, this is interesting. Can we scale this? How do we do it? Let's talk to these guys. And before you know it, you have, you know, so think about this, right? Before you know it, you know, let's say inside of 10 years, knock on wood that Bukele is, you know, still alive and kicking. Let's say inside of 10 years now, you have sort of three different communities of currencies in the world. You have the Bitcoin currencies, the LATAM/Bhutan/, you know, El Salvador types. You have the BRICS types. And then you have the U.S. hegemon along with its partners and conciliaries and slaves. And so, you know, now you have a little bit of diversity in what you can and can't use. And more people, because of the information availability and freedom, are going to be able to see the results and the outcomes, right? This is going to be an interesting time. I personally am glad to be a Bitcoiner. And then we talked about this on the show a little while ago. I'm happy to be buying at these prices. These are depressed in my view. Not financial advice, obviously, but you look at all the stuff happening and there's, you know, I think it's Jeff Booth or Preston, I forget who it is, talking about how the global addressable market, the TAM for Bitcoin, is like, you know, hundreds of trillions, thousands of trillions, whatever dollars in total economic output. You know, if one third or one fifth of all global economic activity is denominated in Bitcoin, you know, what's the price going to be? Is it going to be 28,000? Probably not. Seems to me that a lot of countries are starting to realize they need a non-state asset to move into the next phase of global economics. And the US, I think, realizes it too. They just have a little more to lose, obviously, than the other guys. So they're going to be the last one at the table.
If that ever happens and Bitcoin absolutely rips, we won't be pricing things in US dollar, even Bitcoin. No. It's going to be then how many sats does something cost or something else. We'll move on. No longer will we be thinking about price of anything in US dollar.
Agreed.
And with respect to Bhutan, this, what they're doing now, success, whatever success they have from this, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a long drawn out thing. It's, and they're not going to reach riches in the next few months or even the next few years. They're thinking long-term and looks like they're stacking hard assets like other countries are stacking gold. Now, good for them for stacking gold because that's, you know, it's a hard asset. So there's thirst for this, but I talked about my distrust with gold. You can't audit it. There's no blockchain.
Don't get me wrong. I'm with you. I think you're, you know, like I always joke, you and me are two paisans. And if anyone should like gold, it really should be you and me. And, you know, the only gold I have is the ring on my finger basically. So, the thing is that as a thematic change in investing, you know, you're seeing people maybe not move away from treasuries in every case, but in some cases and moving into hard assets like gold. And so the gap, I should say, is not exactly cavernous between gold and Bitcoin the way it is between treasuries and Bitcoin. It shows me that the preferences are changing to something that's sort of non-state, a neutral reserve, as they say. So exciting news, man. Very exciting news. And, you know, it kind of gave me a little bit of a warm and fuzzy feeling back to when Bukele announced in Miami that El Salvador was going to be holding, buying, mining, all that stuff, right? It was a big deal. And I don't know if it's lived up to the hype, but certainly hasn't met the, you know, fiery, volcanic demise that all the global financial media thought it was going to. And that's a big win in my view. So let's see what happens with Bhutan. Maybe the same outcome, right? I'm excited to see what's next.
Yeah, they're taking a different approach. But well, Mexico, I mean, you touched upon that. We might as well just transition to that topic. And Samson was over there talking to many prominent individuals, including Senator Indira Kempis. And he was also talking to another senator and chairman of the Treasury Committee. And through these discussions, not with Ms. Kempis, but with the other gentleman, it's to do with having Bitcoin adoption take place in Mexico. Now, I think this is more just a nothing burger. I would love to see this happen. I think Mexico has too much to lose if they do anything that enables them to adopt Bitcoin in any sort of fashion, because they're still very much tied to the hip to the US. And this is going to make some real enemies with the United States. So I like what Samson's doing. I just don't think it's going to have any sort of, there won't be any fruit that's going to be bear from this for at least quite some time, years, maybe if not decades, who the heck knows. But I don't know if you have anything else you want to add to that.
Not really. Mexico is a weird case because they're so close to the United States. Although pretty publicly over the last like 2 months, they've had a couple of meetings that have been widely reported on as far as their inclination to cooperate with BRICS countries and OPEC adjacent countries. And also, I think AMLO said, maybe it was like a month ago, we might have covered it on this show, it was either this show or Access of Easy, we talked about it, that America is in decline and Mexico's streets are safer than most of the streets in America. There's clearly some friction there. I don't know how much Joe Biden is doing to alleviate that pressure between the two countries, that tension, but there's just so many opportunities now for these countries to stray is the wrong word, but to you know, step out on their traditional partnerships, let's say. And the longer this goes on and the more stable Bitcoin is as an asset, you know, with every passing day, every hour without an outage, every hour without a, you know, hack or whatever, the asset becomes more stable. And so there's more and more likelihood that this stuff shows up in geopolitical relationships. Now, here's a question for you. Okay. We talk a lot on this show about whether or not Bitcoin is an election issue. We obviously had Dennis Porter on a little while ago. We've talked about it with a lot of guests. I even asked Sean about it last week. You know, is it worth talking to governments about this, or is it just kind of a waste? If there's any wild card that can push Bitcoin into the US election conversation, it's Mexico starting to take it, or Mexico embracing it, or Mexico talking about it as an alternative to the US dollar. Because we'll never do it over here. We sort of don't have the incentives are not right for us at the moment, let's say, to put it gently. And Mexico may feel differently. They're not quite as energy rich as the other two nations involved. And I think they've had a long time in the backseat and might be ready for a little action up front. And Bitcoin might be the thing to get them there. Even if they're not really serious about it, Len, you could really throw a wrench into a US election thinking about accepting Bitcoin or embracing it in some way. So I think that's a wild card too. We'll see. This is very interesting stuff. Dave in the chat asking a question. Do you think cartels are mining?
I saw that.
It is kind of funny.
I don't know.
But the point is, you're right. But I think the point is that neither of us would bet any significant amount of money that the answer is no.
Well, the reality is anybody can mine. You don't need very much. As long as you have access to energy, you could then easily get an S9 and plug it in. Now an S9 will generate you next to nil, but you are theoretically mining Bitcoin.
There's a lot of Bitcoin. There's a lot of cartels mining at a chicken restaurant called Los Polos Hermanos, all chains all across the USA. So if you're interested in finding out, maybe head over to one of those outlets. And
this one is over my head. What is this all about?
It's a Breaking Bad joke. I think that's the name of the chicken place in Breaking Bad where the cartels are running meth. I don't know if that's actually the name of it. Gus Fring is an all-time great character in television. You should watch that show if you haven't. It's a little heavy, but man, is it ever good.
Okay, sorry, I'm not with it. But something I do know though is that Trust Wallet is something that you shouldn't be trusting. And let me
hell of a transition there. Incredible stuff by you.
Thank you. The segues are we're picking them up. So Binance owns Trust Wallet, for anybody that is wondering. I had no idea, to be honest, until I was researching this. And they have from the Trust Wallet website, they say two different things that are contradictory on the main page. They say more than 4.5 plus million assets are supported. And then a little bit later, it says 9+ million assets are supported. Now, I don't know if it's 4.5 million assets or 9 million assets, but how many digital assets are there? 4.5 million? That's a lot of shit.
What's an asset? What's an asset exactly?
Anything that's a digital asset, like Ethereum, that's shit like that. So that's what they're supporting. But 4.5 million.
That's a lot.
Ow. What are you gonna... Anyways, let's just go on, because the website is just absolutely bonkers. And Trust Wallet is available for both your iPhone and Androids, but they also have a browser extension. And that's what I want to talk about, because that's a newsworthy item. The seed generator for the browser extension apparently is flawed, or was flawed. The entropy was only 32 bits. And they found this out through a bug bounty program back in November 2022. At the time they found it, it was fixed within a few days, 4 days from what I understand. But it was out there for 4 days. 60 million users globally, they're saying, with 10 million which are used on a monthly basis. So there's a lot of users out there that are using this, that 4.5 million assets or 9 million, whatever the heck it is. Of those people, only $100,000-ish was stolen from all the users that were compromised. And Trust Wallet promises to reimburse all the stolen funds. But what is interesting is this was reported, or they've learned about this back in November, only just reported this past week. So they've held on to this information secretly for quite some time. Pick your wallets carefully. Trust Wallet, definitely. You don't want to trust that. So another thing you don't want to fuck up when you're talking about you're generating your seeds. Something you're gonna get wrecked in the process. I'll just end it on this. You learn the art of cold storage. It only makes sense. You know, if you need a Bitcoin signing device, cold card, I'll recommend that. Look at the Paranoid setup and how you could set up your cold card. That's the way to do it. Don't trust this shit like Trust Wallet. It's absolute trash.
You know, we talked about this on Access of Easy. The thing that's most infuriating about these stories is that the gap between discovery and disclosure is always way too wide. It's months. You know, what are we talking about here? 6 months? It's May. This was in November, you said. So for 6 months, they sat on this. People were using the wallets to secure, you know, I wouldn't call them assets, but digital assets of all nature. And you know, that's the thing, right? So this is another, again, not to rehash the Access of Easy show, but I think this is important to discuss. all the security flaws and all the scams are in Web3. And I talked about this on Access of Easy, and I got this from our buddy Wayfaring, actually. This is like an interesting way to think about scams. When you get a Nigerian prince email, the reason the thing is spelled so, you know, every word is spelled so poorly and the grammar is terrible and the punctuation is off and the sentence structure is all over the place is because it self-selects for stupid people. And so if you are willing to read the email, even though the grammar is bad, you might just be dumb enough to send the money to. And it seems to me that the scams and stuff like this are constantly hitting the Web3 crowd. And I think maybe being in Web3 might be like another version of the Nigerian prince email, honestly. Like, it's like self-selecting for stupid people who are using browser extension wallets and buying NFTs and 32 bits of entropy. And like, what the fuck is going on over there? This is, to me, a symptom of a larger problem, that Web3 is preying on people who are uninformed and don't understand why having a cold storage wallet's a good idea. Why storing your JPEG after buying your JPEG online is a bad idea. Like, it's all dumb. It's all dumb. And so I just, you know, if you find yourself, like I said on the other show, if you find yourself in an online space where scams are many in number, consider that maybe you're among the people who read the Nigerian prince email, right? You didn't just delete it. And think about how you can get out of that group, because the con artist will come for you at some point. And who knows? They may catch you early on a Saturday morning reading your email. They may catch you after a couple of beers on a Friday night reading your email. Who knows? You don't want to be part of that group, though. There's a reason that Bitcoiners generally are not being scammed. And, you know, I think it's going to continue this way.
I read all those emails.
Anything good? Any opportunities?
All of them. Nothing. Nothing caught my eye, but I read them all. If they're going to take the trouble of copying and pasting it, I'm going to read it. So anyway.
You're going to take the time?
Yeah, why not? Anyway, so let's talk about LastPass. And this is a place where you can store your passwords and all that jazz. And apparently some people have been storing their keys on this. So one person did so. And, well, unfortunately, he lost in the process 5.7 Bitcoin and 20 ETH as a result of this. So somebody was able to hack into it and steal this guy's Bitcoin and a shitcoin. So there's lots of options available to you. I just wanted to just a call to action, everybody out there. Don't store your keys anywhere on a cloud or something like this. It doesn't make sense. Like a cloud or even this, it's really somebody else's computer you're storing it on. There's no real cloud. It's a computer. Right. So there are options. You know, you have the metal plates, you could stamp washers and put them on a nut and bolt or bolt. And so there are a lot of options you could do. Just don't take one of these quick, easy paths to storing your stuff, because you're going to get wrecked if ever your information is compromised.
It's pretty sad, eh? Like LastPass is a good example of, you know, a retail facing product it's basically marketed as, forget about having to take responsibility for your passwords, give them all to us. We'll store them for you securely. And then what happens when you don't? It's one thing for like your bank information to leak or your credit card to be like, I've had my credit card frauded a million times, honestly, over the years. Like, I've had a credit card since I was like 20, 21, maybe. And it's, every so often I have to cut it up and get a new one because something happens. I must have, you know, I lost it somehow or who knows.
No, you scanned it and it was compromised in the process.
Well, whatever. No. Whatever.
That something was the way happened. It is.
Something happened. And like, it's one thing because you call Visa or MasterCard, whatever, they just give you the money back. It's no big deal. But in Bitcoin, man, like if you got your keys on the cloud, take care. Ta-ta. You're not getting that back, man. Responsibility is a difficult thing for people to swallow, stomach, and digest, I think, these days. There's a lot more opportunity than there ever has been before for people to just abdicate responsibility for things that they should take control of, whether it's childcare, education, healthcare, or their Bitcoin keys. And it happens more and more. It's funny. I know somebody who I was trying to set up with a little bit of Bitcoin last week. And I was saying, download Blue Wallet, write down your seed phrase, and then send me your address. I'll send you $20 in Bitcoin. And this person sends me the address. I said, that was quick. You already wrote them down? And the person goes, I just screen capped it and sent it to myself in Gmail. And I was like, okay, that's not what I fucking said. Delete and it's a fight, right? Oh, I don't want to delete it. Are you going to send it? No, I'm not going to send it now. ULHFSP, my friend. These things are so easy to do. And the funny thing is when you tell people, so this is the other thing I think about sometimes. We've fallen so far from grace that we've strayed so far from God's holy light, Len, that taking 10 minutes to write down 12 words is considered too much friction. Can't do it. People just won't do it. It's unbelievable. And it's like a sign of decline, right? As a friend of the show, Massa, would say, sign a late stage fiat, right? This kind of late stage fiat thinking. No one is willing to take any responsibility. They want everyone to do everything else for them. And that's right. I see Knight Ranny there. Maybe I should have told him. No,
don't say his name. Anyways, the two more stories in the Bitcoin side of things before we could transition to Clown World is Neutron Pay. It has launched in Canada, and it's a Bitcoin Lightning app, and they're partnering up with Ditto Banks. And this is going to allow for remittances to El Salvador. From what I understand, there's KYC involved here. So if people are not happy with that, that's fine. This is just hopefully there's options. I'm not sure if there's any competition in Canada. But for this, here you go. You can send remittances. It has the ability for QR code scanner, customizable addresses. And Canada itself is the second largest Salvadorian community outside of El Salvador, making it a really good market, the perfect market for this type of technology. And they say they have 190 plus payout / off-ramp countries. That's almost every country in the world. And they have 34 pay-in / on-ramp countries and 8 plus fiat currencies. Good to see. I never heard of Neutron Pay before, but there's now in Canada. And if you want to send remittances to El Salvador or to the other 34 countries they have available to them, you could do so easily on Lightning. I like this.
I love it. Companies building on Lightning, remittance companies building on Lightning. This is a great use case. Everyone knows that Bitcoin and remittances are match made in heaven. And, you know, it's good to see that. I can see Len eyeing the chat and the video, making sure that things are not getting out of control.
There's just some of those we gotta just like leave. Anyways,
extremely volatile, the price and the chat.
Well, you know what? You read my mind, because with volatility of the price, this is a story that may impact it.
Okay.
And it's a good reminder that there could be opportunities to buy this year. United States government intends to sell, 41,000 Bitcoin this year. They're going to do it in tranches, I think in four different tranches. And the United States government are sitting on 200,000 Bitcoin as it is, a little bit over that. So that's a large number. So maybe this could be their way of starting to hold on to and keep Bitcoin, is just rather than sell what their stash, just hold on to it. But they have money problems. They got to raise capital somehow. Of the 41,000 Bitcoin, keep in mind how much this is. That is around 45 straight days of mining with 900 Bitcoin rewards per day, because right now the mining reward is 900 Bitcoin per day. So that's 45 straight days of mining that's going to be released to the market. So here you go. There could be some buying opportunities moving forward. There may be some competing forces, though, with each bank failure. Every time the bank fails, price of Bitcoin goes up. Now they have to sell more Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin goes down. We'll see which is going to win in the short term. Long term, we know it's going to win, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. So there could be some buying opportunities in the near future once this Bitcoin hits the market.
They're selling Bitcoin so that the price is low going into the election. They'll refill the SBR when the Bitcoin price is below 15K. Okay. Everyone knows that's the plan. Brandon is going to be able to take care of that. Okay. He's already talked to the OBEC plus or BPEC plus countries. And as they are producing, they will produce more and we'll be able to refill the SBR, the US SBR, the Bitcoin reserve.
They're smart, though. If you think about how they're doing this.
Why are they selling it, Len?
It's the smartest move. They're pumping the Bitcoin bags by letting the banks fail. Have them fail, pump up the price of Bitcoin, then you sell it and you make a killing on this. This is the way you pump things up. You drive up the price somehow, and they have the ability to do that, to just create a bunch of debt, have all the banks fail, and the price of Bitcoin, oh, wow, it's a heck of a lot of money now. Start selling it, and there you go.
Why don't they just have deep state operative Jim Cramer tell everyone the price is going down, and that'll send it to the moon too?
Inverse Kramer. Okay, let's clear, move on.
Clear deep state operative Jim Cramer.
Let's move on. Let's talk about First Republic Bank and the clown world side of things. There's so much to talk about. And this is the second largest bank to collapse in the United States. And if you see above me, we have 0 days since the last bank collapse. Signature, Silicon Valley, First Republic, all within the past little while have gone tits up. And like I said earlier in the show, we should do the CBB death pool to see which bank is going to capitulate next. And again, we could send all sats to charitable organizations. I don't know, but JP Morgan they're the ones that acquired the First Republic Bank. And they says here they stand to profit $500 million annually as a result. And well, the FDIC, i.e. you, is on the hook for $13 billion in losses. And this is also, they provided financing of $50 billion for this whole thing. So for those keeping a score at home, that's around 1 to 2 rounds of aid to Ukraine. And everything I will now do moving forward is going to be based in the price of aid to Ukraine. So we should start doing that. And so anyways, what happened here with this bank in the last little while, we had 3 banks fail. I'm seeing some similarities between what happened in 1929 and that started the Great Depression. At that time, we had bank failure en masse. And I took a look at my notes. I took a look in history here. 1929, there was 25,000 banks in operation in the United States. 25,000. That was 1929. By 1933, 14,000. So a lot went tits up. And that number, 14,000, has basically remained steady until the early 80s. And that 1981 was still around 14,000 banks in the United States. But since then, that number has been slowly declining. And right now we're sitting at under 5,000 banks. Consolidation has been happening in this space for some time, and it will continue to happen every time another bank goes tits up. And smaller banks are going to continually be bought up by bigger banks. And if you are a client, who would think that they should be using a regional bank? If you do so, you do so with excessive risk. You would have to go with one of the bigger banks. Now, by doing so, you're adding further pressure on these smaller banks, and it's more likely they're going to collapse because they're going to have less capital for them to operate and do business. So there's going to be a lot of these banks collapsing moving forward. But another thing is, even if they do collapse, there's a chance that the Federal Reserve might bail them out. So they could take on excessive risk as a result because they know they're maybe backed up by the Fed. And remember the Fed. They said when SVB failed, they blamed that on social media for the bank run. Who's responsible for this one? Is it climate change or rights for abortion? I don't know. They have to pin it on something, but it cannot always be social media that's the result, the catalyst for this. But really, it's greed. It's all fucking greed. It's fiat greed at that that's causing all this. The senior age, aka theft, and we have the inflationists, they're pulling the levers out there trying to make things work. And people they're getting fucked up. And until recently, they were the only ones getting fucked. But now banks, too, are getting in line to get fucked as well. And sadly, the losses, I talked about the FDIC shilling out money and the Fed shilling out money. These losses, they're socialized. The profits are privatized. And that is too bad because every time they do this, it goes to show you it's not a capitalist system. You're having intervention by the government, and that's not capitalism. Sadly, through this whole thing, there may have been an opportunity for people to refinance their loans or whatever with this bank that failed, but the First Republic Bank. Think about it. See, if you had a mortgage, you went to First Republic just before they collapsed. Did you get then a free mortgage as a result? Probably not. But anyways, Normie Media, I took a look out there. They weren't reporting on this until just today. I checked the last few days. It's been very quiet on this front. Today, finally, we got something. I checked CNN. There was a small blurb. I checked MSNBC. I checked Fox. You get a little bit of everything. But New York Times had something on their front page. It was right there. You couldn't miss it. And they had a beautiful chart that shows the U.S. bank failures by year adjusted for inflation. And they showed all the bank failures in the last 15 years or so. So good for them. And also, if you think that all this is lending to the strength of the United States, no, because CDS traders out there, somebody posted a chart. I don't know how true this is, but it lists the probability of default for all the nations out there, the top nations out there. Canada sitting a little bit over 10% that it's going to default. United States, 15%. 15%, it's going to fucking default according to CDS.
Those candles, insane. Buddy, are nuts too. Like, they're fucking straight up over the last week or so.
That is insane that it's the case. And you know what? I don't know what else to say about this. It's, we talk about this every so often. I'm sure we'll talk about another bank failing in the next little while. PacWest seems to be the one you're thinking that's going to fail. It's too bad. You're playing with people's money. And every time this happens and they have to bail them out, they're socializing the losses. It's pathetic.
So a couple things here. C-Funk, who does business development for CoinKite, is in the chat. And I'm making a request here on the air, Celia, okay? You need to add get pull requests for three new info panels. Number one, total dollars given to Ukraine. Okay, I need to see that on my block clock ASAP. Number two, total regional banks in the United States is the second one. And there was a third. I forget what I say. Yes. Days since the last bank failure needs to be the third one. So we need this information. I want you to tell Rodolfo that we're asking for it, and we'll do whatever it takes. Okay. If it takes, another appearance on the show, happy to do that. And if not, then we can figure something out. I think this is important information for everybody. We all need to have this stuff on our block clocks. Len, there's no reason to use regional banks for your deposits, as you mentioned, which will lead to more withdrawals, more quote unquote runs, and the ball will continue to roll downhill.
It's climate change.
It's amazing, that's right? It's funny. The
financial climate change.
There's a great meme of a dog eating, and he's got the two frame meme. At the top, it's the dog when he's eating his dinner, and it's the American flag, stock market. It's like representing all the capitalism things. And then the second picture, same dog, says the dog when I'm eating my dinner, and he's got the sickle and hammer, the communist like hat, the Great Wall line. Like this is what is going on, man. Like every time someone loses that doesn't want to lose, we all share in the loss. Every time someone wins and I don't win, I don't get anything. It's ridiculous. Like, what are we doing here, man? It's crazy. And the effects are amplified when there's social unrest to go with it. And so you're seeing now in Paris, for example, you know, what is this? I don't see this on NPCNN, MSNPC, CBNPC. None of these news networks are showing this stuff. These giant riots in Paris have been going on for more than a month now, maybe more than 2 months.
Explosive bomb, like a small homemade one at the police.
Dude, crazy. Nuts. It's insane. It's insane. And that's what social unrest looks like. We've talked on the show before about what it looks like when enough of the losses are socialized and enough of the profits are privatized for a society. The fact of the matter is it's unknown. It's unprecedented. No one knows what it's going to look like. I was talking about this with friends of ours. I won't mention any details of like where I was doing it, but and it's funny, sometimes people just don't seem to think it's that big a deal, like inflation at 13%, you know, or whatever it is in the UK, 10% is not that big a deal, and that we go to the store and see that like eggs, meat, milk, and any protein, vegetable is all up by 40%, 30% in the last 3 years. And the inflation number comes out and it's 6. Fuel's up by 20%. The inflation number comes out and it's 6 or 7 or 5. At some point, this is going to stop working. I don't know when that point is, but it seems to me that bank failures is probably a good indicator that point is coming sooner than later.
You want to know when it's going to stop working?
Yeah, please.
Pensions are impacted by this because pensions they were invested in this.
Yeah.
And that is going to impact people because they have no way to earn money once the pension collapses.
I want to talk
very little opportunity to make money.
I want to talk a bit about, sorry, I got a message on my phone here. That's relatively important. This is a Canadian show. We should talk about the PSAC negotiation, the public service negotiation. We should, because you've mentioned pensions there, and I think it's important. I don't know that much about PSAC, that whole side of things. But if you watch those negotiations, the thing I keep seeing is that there's a focus now, even though the union said that this wasn't the focus at the beginning of the negotiation period, it was pretty clear that over the last week or so, that you know that dragged on just a little under 2 weeks, over the last week or so, the shift really went from salaries to work from home. Now, you can say whatever you want about public servants working from home or not working from home. You can agree or disagree with how many days they should be there. And you yourself, listener, viewer, may have thoughts about your own employment situation and how many days you're in the office or, you know, on your couch or at your kitchen table, whatever. I look at this and I think that the union is pretty clearly not giving the whole story. And I also think that maybe the employer is not giving the whole story. And I'm not necessarily saying it is nefarious in either case, but I do think there is a concerning truth in the middle of the negotiations that neither party is talking about. And it's the value of the commercial real estate portfolios involved. When it comes to pensions, the CPP, and I bet you a bunch of private sector pensions, are invested in Canadian real estate. And a huge chunk of that is commercial real estate. All these giant skyscrapers in downtown Toronto, in Ottawa, even in Hamilton, Vancouver, you name the metropolitan center. And I think there's a lot of money, hundreds of billions of dollars tied up in real estate investing, specifically commercial real estate investing. And neither party seems to want to talk about how full work from home or full hybrid work, however they're defining it, where, you know, I think what are they? They're 2 days a week or something like that, or 3 days a week in the office. If they go back to five, you know, a la the pandemic period, what damaging effect that would have, not only on the public service pension, but on all pensions across the country who are invested in that portfolio, and maybe even international pensions who are invested in that portfolio. I think it's a significant chunk of change they stand to lose. And the union, again, I don't know enough about collective bargaining, but the union seemed to have backed off that work from home thing pretty quickly. And I bet you there was a come to Jesus moment at the table where somebody at the negotiating table, probably one of the mediators, goes, hey, you both actually need more or less full-time or close to full-time in office, in-person work to sustain the value of these portfolios. And, you know, as a second order effect, sustain the value of the pensions you're both relying on to keep things calm. You on the side of, you know, the union membership and solidarity, you on the side of broader social unrest. You have to get people in the offices at least 3 days a week, because if you don't, the value of these things is going to tank. And, you know, pensions are delicate for a number of reasons. We talked about these on the show. Predominantly, maybe chief among those concerns at the moment is just the lifespan of people. You know, I was saying to a guy at work today, actually, that it's funny when you think about pensions. You know, at 65, you know, my grandfather was retiring from Stelco, you know, a life of working in the steel mill and things like that. And we'll talk about that in a second. So that's great. That's a great comment from Rob in the chat. If you're on audio, I'm going to talk about that in a second, but this is a high quality, that's pure alpha on the CBP. It's interesting that, you know, there's a period, and I've talked about this before, or a conceivable reality where I'm collecting a pension at the same time as my father is. It's never happened before. And so I'll read this comment here from Rob. Latest annual report, the CPP had a total net asset value of $497 billion, so $500 billion. And the real estate portfolio accounted for 20% of the assets under management.
I'm going to give you some color here. Because I have some stats for San Francisco. Now, I know San Francisco is a very small market in the overall real estate gig here, but I'm not sure how much exposure to CPP or other pension plans have to real estate in San Francisco, but San Francisco has gone downhill quite a bit since Barry Bonds has retired. And some examples is the real estate. In fact, there's one example I'm going to show you, a 22-story tower located at 350 California Street. You can Google it. Very interesting tower. It's only minutes away from the bay. And in 2019, it was worth the market price $300 million. Now, $300 million in 2019 should be quite a bit more now, $330, $340, $350. But yeah, it's on sale. Bids are coming in, $60 million. That's a huge loss as a result of what's happened in the past little while. A lot of people, as you mentioned, doing hybrid work. And also San Francisco's gone down the wayside.
San Francisco also, you might get stabbed or killed by a shit-covered homeless guy addicted to drugs at any time of day. Yeah, that too.
And that's banks... important. And these pension plans, they are exposed heavily to, well, banks, mortgages. And as we've got information from Rob, pensions are exposed to real estate as well. It's too bad.
That's the CPP. Is the public service pension the same? Is it CPP? I don't know. Someone can tell me if that's the same body of work there. I suspect it's close. I mean, in any case, Canadian pensions have probably all have Canadian exposure rules. And so I'm pretty sure that you're going to see similar exposure. It's pretty wild, man. And so, you know, when it comes to pensions being the first domino to fall, you're right. And I think that that domino is a lot closer than people realize, because at some point, you know, brain drain and global work, again, sovereign individual thesis here coming into play, friends and enemies, you're going to see brain drain at a high enough clip that the best and brightest will refuse to work in offices. They'll work remotely. They'll work for other countries. They'll work for other companies. They'll take payment in neutral assets. And then what do? Then pensions really start to falter. And then the printing you have to do to match the entitlements is ungodly. Okay. It's the kind of thing that's just, you can't imagine the volume that's required. Yeah.
They'll cut back on the services. There's no way they can maintain a level of services.
Even if they do, like the printing is going to be, the thing is,
it's going to be reactionary. So that's all.
And it's the same as what we talk about with hyper-Bitcoinization. You know, what's the price where hyper-Bitcoinization happens? Is it a million? No, it's probably somewhere on the road to a million that enough people start to convert that it doesn't matter what the price is. If the pensions suddenly say, okay, well, you know, OMERS in Ontario, a huge pension, like we've talked about before. Okay, OMERS is no longer indexing to inflation. We're going to do inflation minus 20%. That's a big signpost. And so the reduction in services will be enough for people who are thinking about moving to move. And we've talked about this before, that on the periphery of the price action in Bitcoin, the value of each Satoshi, there's another whole section of people who are just waiting for one more negative externality before they jump in. And I think you're seeing these things start to take shape on the horizon, that the terrain is forming in front of you here for a world where currency values nosedive on news of, you know, like in France, for example, okay? This is not on any media, because if everyone was thinking about, hey, why do they have to extend the pension years out 2 years? Is my country going to do that? And then before you know it, you're down a rabbit hole, right? And because of information availability, the avenue that most of the press has chosen to take on this, have they chosen to take it independently? I don't know. That's a point of, you know, potential debate. We won't do it on this program tonight, but maybe on Saturday at the meetup, we'll talk about it. They've chosen to black out any reporting on that, basically. And you can tell me whether or not you think that's a signpost or not. I believe that it is.
For sure it is. But keep in mind, I'm going to go to the next story. We don't have that much time left.
All right.
Bank of England.
Yep.
Their chief
have economist. Fun saying tour. Holy shit, man. What a joke. Yeah.
Go ahead. Essentially, that's what the chief economist from the Bank of England said. He said, have fun staying poor, because he said Brits need to accept they are now poor. And he acknowledged people are worse off. This is after what has transpired in the past year or so, because they did helicopter a bunch of money. There was cash support for low-income earners. They did this in January 2023 to the tune of, I believe, £900. And the government was also helping out people with energy bills, paying them this past winter to the tune of around £400. So even with all these handouts and trying to assist people, still we have admission that you are worse off than before. So the have fun staying poor, they're telling it to the people of Britain. This, and another thing too, remember they were doing the windfall tax to those energy producers.
Yeah.
After all of that, this is proof that they fucked up and they have no way to fix it. And you have to live with the consequences as a result of this. That's too bad. And what are the options you have moving forward? Your pensions, as we're talking about, they're going to continually get wrecked. The money you're going to put in the bank, you don't know if that bank is going to be there tomorrow.
Yes.
What options do you have? Well, here you go. You could buy an asset that you could hold, we're talking about Bitcoin, that you could hold in cold storage that nobody could take away from you as long as you've secured the keys. And the price, the asset itself, over a period of time, not financial advice, tends to go up in value because there is a hard limit. I'm not going to talk about the virtues and the fundamentals of Bitcoin. Everybody knows it. But here you go. This is a sad reality. The chief economist from the Bank of England, they know it. I'm sure he's getting a hefty paycheck too, so he's not feeling the pinch. But the people in his constituents, they're feeling it. They're fucked. Soon we're going to have the same emission from our central bank in Canada. And who knows? The Fed, they may also say the same thing in the not too distant future. And you know what? People are just going to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, whatever. They'll just take it. And these too many normies, they just do not care. It's too bad.
I think Boomer in the chat is making a good point that I think it's sort of in the same vein of what I said earlier. On the outside of the price, there's like this huge swath of people who are paying attention and waiting for one more thing. I think this is going to be the one more thing for a lot of them. The one thing I'm curious about, Len, so obviously Rishi Sunak over in the UK, not exactly a popular fellow, but is talking a lot about CBDCs and digital currencies. He's a proponent of those tools, legitimate or not. I think they're going to probably be seen there at scale before they're seen many other places. I've seen stories of people having trouble buying Bitcoin in the United Kingdom now. You're talking about
in the States too.
It's happening a lot of places. It is starting. Blocked. Yeah, it is starting. And I think that people need to be aware of this. There's a lot of stuff going on now that seems to be difficult it's hard to observe all these things happening at one time or happening in succession and view them as coincidental. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole tonight, but I think most Bitcoiners probably feel the same way. The fact of the matter is that 5 years ago, if they had banned Bitcoin, no one would have said anything about it. But now there are a lot of people watching. Boomer, you're right. And I think that this is basically beyond dispute. There's a fear in modern financial media, modern financial systems, modern governments, I think to some extent, though I don't know exactly how much, that they're not the only game in town and they're not the fastest horse in the race anymore. And a lot of people are going to be turned off by the debasement of currency, the devaluing of their dollar, and the drop in their purchasing power, all while, what is that line from, is 1984 a Brave New World? The Empire told them not to believe what was right in front of their face. It was the greatest command or something like that. I forget the line exactly, but you're basically there, right? Inflation's only 6% unless you buy anything that keeps you healthy. Then it's 30%. Unless you buy gas to get to work at your underpaying job, then it's 30%. You're almost there, man. A lot of people are probably starting to think the same way.
Let's move the clown world north, Joey.
Sure.
And I'll lead off with something. There was a study that was done by CTV News, and in it, 93% of the people that they surveyed are interested in a 4-day work week. So on the surface, you're looking at this, oh man, people.
Hang on a minute. Did they ask you?
No.
They didn't ask me either. What would you have said? Are you interested in a 4-day work week?
Hell yeah. Yeah, too. But it's not the way. Like,
tell me more about the 4-day work week.
It's not like you're simply working less. It's you're going to still work the same amount of hours in those 4 days. So it's a 4 days at 10 hours each shift. So you're still doing your 40 hours, but instead of over a 5-day period, you're doing it over a 4-day period. And according to this study, adults under the age of 35 were most likely to consider also a pay cut in exchange for this type of arrangement. So this may be one way for employers to save on costs where they can pay less to people who are willing to work a 4-day work week, but at the same time, a lot of businesses operate 5, 6, and 7 days a week, so they still have to staff positions accordingly. So I'm not sure how this is going to work out in the end, but I saw this, and if there's enough traction here, there may be a push for this to happen, even on a pilot scale for some type of businesses. And if they do offer it, and they offer something like this, there may be a glut of people wanting to work for that. You were talking about the brain drain. If this is something that's very appealing to employees, this could be a way to draw talent in. So something interesting to see what could happen in the next little while.
The decentralized man can work anywhere for anyone and for a stateless currency. And like, man, I honestly don't know how to convince people that this is the future here. If you're seeing it in a place that's as entrenched, right, as the public service, then you're going to see it a lot of places if you're not already. And, I'll just speak about even like the CBP, okay? Little business on air here. Len and I get a lot of sponsorship offers, and we obviously don't take them all. We value the brand of the Bitcoiners podcast, Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, and we value, I think, your time and energy that you guys, give to the show and the support you give us. And so we don't take a lot of sponsorships, but almost every sponsor we've had discussions with, what do they offer to pay us in first, Len?
Oh, Bitcoin's always an option.
It's always an option because it's probably easier for them. It's something we like, and it's just faster, more convenient. It's auditable. It's not debatable. We understand the value. I think as this kind of happens faster and faster, I think the first domino to drop, Len, first shoe to drop, as far as like people not being debased, how, you know, this is a bit of a deep cut, but we should talk about it because I'm kind of in the mood now. How much longer do you think the 2 week pay period, the 2 week arrears period is going to last in most places? Do you think people are going to want that money faster than 2 weeks in the next 3 years, let's say?
I think they want it right away, right now. But
I think they want it right now too. But it's hard to convince them. How are they going to do away with it? I don't know. But is the ask going to become so big as prices fluctuate more and people are more concerned about inflationary pressures? And I don't know.
I can't say.
I don't know. And I don't know logistically how possible.
I don't know logistically the challenges in order to institute that. I'm not in the hiring side of things. CDP is relatively small. A team of 5,000. It's a well-oiled machine. So CBP? I'm not sure. We have a huge staff over here. So I can't say, like, it could be just too problematic. And I think that 2 week grace period is also there for a way in case there's illnesses or if they leave, then you're able to pay them out at the time in which they are. It's almost real time if you don't have that 2 week buffer built in place. So I think it's just kind of standard, industry standard. It just works. But I don't know. I mean, logistically, maybe they could do it. But if people could get instant pay without waiting 2 weeks, hell yeah, they'll do it.
Dave asked a comment here. I always put accepting Bitcoin for less than list price in my marketplace or Kijiji ads. No takers yet, but I'm hoping adoption picks up soon. Accelerate. That's an accelerate moment, Dave.
There you go. Got the accelerate coin.
What else we got?
Okay, well, last Canadian story I have, and it touches on the healthcare system in Canada. I know you love to talk
about
this.
I love talking about
it. I know this is more the other side of the country, BC. This is the BC Children's Hospital. So I can't really talk about how it is like over there in BC, the healthcare system, but a tweet came out from the Children's Hospital. This is right from an official account, no spoofing, no hyperbole, nothing. And I'll read it verbatim. Not feeling great. Your appointment can wait. If you or your child are coming to one of our clinics but are feeling sick, please call and rebook your appointment for when you are feeling well. Thanks for keeping our patients and staff safe and happy. BC Children's Hospital. Now, I have a young one. She's now 10. So the younger you are as a child, the less likely, because you don't have the ability to speak, to communicate what it is that's wrong with you. You can't explain where it hurts, how you feel. So you have to rely on these skilled people, these doctors, to provide the care to help out young children who sometimes are in dire need of healthcare. For the BC's Children's Hospital to come on and say, stay home if you're sick and come in when you're healthy, that is pathetic. That is not the way how you treat ill people. Somebody that's sick needs to be dealt with right away before it gets even worse. You don't want to have anything happen to anybody, but especially a young child. This is very sick and extremely sad.
Universal healthcare is neither universal nor healthcare in this country. It's simple as that. I can't recount the Achilles and ACL story again. You know, it's even bothering me to do it this many times. But, you know, I'm sure everyone in the chat, everyone listening, watching, has their own healthcare stories that are nightmares. The point is, of course, not to say that there's not quality healthcare providers. There are. There's always good doctors and good nurses at hospitals. But, you know, whether you like the idea of nurses getting paid or being unionized or whatever, whether you like the idea of doctors making a ton of money to basically, you know, run a meat market at hospitals and just push people through one after another. The fact of the matter is you're at a point now in Canada where the services, and Ron Butler says this a lot, friend of the show, Ron Butler says this a lot. It's a good point. The services are not getting better. This much is for sure. I mean, a lot of people would argue they're getting worse. I think I'd be among them at this point. And the cost to maintain them just keeps going up. I'm paying more every paycheck every year than I was in the years past or year past for a service that doesn't really work that well, honestly, Len. You know, I remember the gap between, you know, tearing my ACL and getting an MRI. It was like 4 months maybe. And you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, it's not the best, but it's paid for. At least you don't go bankrupt paying for your healthcare. If you have insurance, you know, you're not going to go bankrupt paying for your healthcare. I know there's stories, people in the States who misread a policy or go out of out of program or whatever. These stories are very few and far between. I think even the most, you know, sort of fever pitch proponent of universal healthcare will have to admit that in a country of, you know, 400 million people, to have 10 stories every year where someone goes bankrupt, you know, misreading a policy, it's really not that bad. If it's 1,000 stories, it's still really not that bad. If it's 10,000, it's still really not that bad. Because in Canada last year, another friend of the show, Mike Campbell, pointed out a few weeks ago on his program, something like 20,000 people died waiting for care in Canada. Is that acceptable? Is it acceptable to run a hospital program where you tell a young person who, like Len said, can't articulate the problem to wait until they're well before they come in? What if they don't get well? Then what do you do? What if they get worse? What are we paying doctors and nurses for? Are we paying them to be around healthy people? Or are we paying them to fix sick people? I would argue that it's clearly the fucking one with the sick people. And any doctor who signs up for that and demands not to be seen by sick people should be fired. Pick another profession. Be an accountant. No sick people in accounting. Be a fucking bus driver. You know, you can wear a mask and not converse with sick people on your bus. But a doctor doesn't have that choice. It's a calling more than it is a backup career or a fallback plan. And so I expect to see changes there. Will we see them? I don't know. Probably not. We're not going to see a lot of positive changes here in the next 10 years, I think, unfortunately. And so you better prepare for that. You know, it's a funny joke to make that if you don't take care of your health, you're going to find out that the doctor who treats you for your heart problem in 10 years, you know, cheated on Zoom school and only got in because of intersectionality to a university program or something like that. It is funny. And I know it's an exaggeration, but, you know, how far is this from what you thought reality was? How many of you listening, watching have kids? You know, you can't bring your kid to a hospital because they're sick. Well, when should I bring them? It's fucking insane.
Wait till they get better. Bring them on in at that point.
Yeah, decay. Pure decay here. Signpost. Another signpost on the CBP.
Yeah. And that's it for the Canadian stories, Joey. I do have a no coiner of the week, but I do not have a Bitcoiner of the week. Do you have any of the two?
I have neither. I've had a fucking swamp week and it's going to get worse. So all you, buddy, go ahead.
So my no coiner of the week is a lady by the name of Tiffany Lee. And she revealed that she is feeding her 18-month-old daughter crickets as a source of protein. God. Why is she doing this? She's feeding her daughter crickets. It's not for health reasons or anything, but it's strictly to save money. She's saying it's saving her hundreds of dollars on the grocery bill. And initially when she decided, according to this article, to feed her daughter a cricket, a whole roasted cricket at that, the daughter, the little child, immediately spit it out, shaking her head no. The baby, the child, the toddler, understands that this is something you should not eat. And initially she tried to say no, but over time, through, I don't know, I don't want to say what it is, but eventually the child is now eating it in her meals. And Lee claims that she blends up the crickets in the pancake mix. And her daughter didn't even notice that it was blended in. And she wants some more as a result. So she keeps feeding her more and more pancake mix with crickets. Also, dinner time, she puts the cricket protein powder in a macaroni and cheese mixture, which she says is a huge hit. And she says that it saves her on grocery bills and the whole nine yards. The comments for this were great because Miss Lee is, from what I understand, a influencer. So she is. This is her job, is to be out there as a freelancer, try to drum up as much support and everything on her Instagram along those lines. And one of the comments says, this is a woman that has her priorities straight. Mom has to save money to buy designer labels and look good for her selfies at the top of that list. Another comment, look like she isn't cutting down on her clothing or jewelry, just the kids' food. Another one's talking about a YSL bag. I have no idea what that is. I did some research. Apparently,
it's a brand name, right?
Yeah, so and expensive at that, like $1,500.
I've seen YSL on stuff before. Yeah,
I haven't. I'm living a sheltered lifestyle, but that's the stuff that, at least from the appearance, is the stuff that she wants to spend the money on. These are the important items that she is willing to dedicate her budget towards, not feeding her kid stuff that anybody else would eat, but to save money to make sure that she's able to have all these nice clothing and everything. Crickets for the kid, but designer clothing is for her. I can guarantee you she does not own any Bitcoin. And as a result, she is my Bitcoiner, sorry, my no coiner of the week.
I hate that people are feeding their kids insects at all. You know, what is that story, right? Your kid is like your cat. You can say that they're vegan, but everyone knows who's making the decision or something like that. And like the kid, nobody wants to eat bugs, man. And I, you know, to quote Doomberg again, like CBP friend of the show quote night here, you first, if you want other people to eat bugs, if you want people to sack their diet and go full insect or whatever these people are hoping to do, then you start. You do it for a year, 2 years, 5 years, be the change you want to see in the world, like Barack said, or whoever said that, probably Barack Obama, or maybe he stole it from someone, I don't know. But like, if you want that, then you start the movement. Don't tell me I got to do it. I'm not interested. I'm not eating bugs. And people who feed their kids cricket craft dinner should be barred from having more children. Honestly, there's gotta be a way to do that. Put in a licensing requirement or like a test, something. Gotta be a way.
It's just whatever. Sadly, we're going to see more and more stories like this moving forward, and they will become more and more normal, if that's the correct term.
They'll be praised. They'll be praised in all likelihood, right? Like, you can see a world where that's the case, can't you?
It's kind of there right now. This influencer is getting all the attention.
I'm finding it that from C-Funk in the chat, it was Gandhi. You said, be the change you want to see, not Barack Obama. So a little bit off there. Yeah. I am sure that on one of those blue and red Obama stickers that said hope, there was probably a quote about that, right?
Probably. But you know what? A lot of these things are just rip off or a slight variation of
the original. Still the best ever election ground game, that 08 Obama run. Anyway, go ahead. What else we got? Oh, no coiner. Hit it.
That's my no coiner. That's
do you have a Bitcoiner?
No. No Bitcoiner. Okay. No. I couldn't get one. So
that's it. We'll go to the after show here. God bless you, everyone. Price of Bitcoin, Len. I see there behind you, $28,015 US. Not great, not bad. Not great, not bad.
Slightly down for this show. It's $37,955 in Canadian. So unfortunately, we didn't go up this show. You people were very naughty. So keep stacking.
Love it, man. Come back for Len and Medi on Wednesday. And we're going to the after show here, where I don't know what we'll talk about, but I'm sure we'll have at least 10 minutes of content on something that at least we care about. So tune in. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube. And if not, we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yeah, take care and PV.